6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Syria Monday announced a 48-hour extension of a localized ceasefire in and around the contested city of Aleppo, where violence has threatened a nationwide cessation of hostilities. It will extend a shaky truce that has been punctuated by fighting through Wednesday. In Paris Monday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said the U.S. and Russia are trying to salvage that nationwide cessation of hostilities with a new agreement.
These are words on a piece of paper. They are not actions. But they are a commitment by Russia to, in fact, limit the Syrian regime from its ability to fly in civilian-occupied areas, as well as to work with the commanders on the ground in order to try to deliver stability and a reaffirmation of the cessation of hostilities.
Kerry in the French capital meeting with other members of the so-called International Syria Support Group, a 17-nation body that's been backing a UN effort for a political transition in Syria. In Democratic Republic of Congo, opposition presidential candidate Moise Katumbi appeared Monday before prosecutors in Lubumbashi over allegations he hired foreign mercenaries. The wealthy businessman, who's also governor of Katanga province, denied any wrongdoing. Hundreds of supporters rallied outside. Among them, Ilunga Mbayo, who said the whole matter has been politicized and comes just after Katumbi announced his candidacy. The 51-year-old Katumbi has announced his intention to challenge incumbent President Joseph Kabila in the elections that are scheduled later this year. Although Mr. Kabila, who is barred by the Constitution from seeking a third term, has not yet indicated his intentions. This is VOA News. The United States Monday said it's trying to confirm Iran tested a precision-guided missile 2 weeks ago. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
We're aware of Iranian claims of an additional ballistic missile launch. I would note we're also aware of statements from the defense minister indicating that such a launch did not take place. So we're still trying to get to the bottom of what exactly transpires.
Another U.S. spokesperson warned such a launch in the wake of last year's international nuclear deal would be both provocative and destabilizing. Iran's defense minister denied his government had recently tested a medium-range ballistic missile. The U.S. Defense Department says the notorious leader of Islamic State extremists in Iraq's western Anbar province was killed in a coalition airstrike early this month, along with three other jihadists. A Pentagon spokesman said the May 6 strike near the town of Rutba targeted militant Abu Wahib and his cohorts traveling in a vehicle. The premier of Canada's Alberta province, Rachel Notley, said Monday that 90% of the city of Fort McMurray was spared from a massive wildfire that's been burning out of control. She made an aerial tour of the city and its surroundings.
I will say that I was very much struck by the power of the devastation of the fire. It was really quite overwhelming in some spots. But I will also say that I was similarly struck by the proximity of that devastation to neighborhoods that were untouched.
Officials said the wildfires from the massive blaze destroyed more than 160,000 hectares. Police in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, fired tear gas and used water cannon Monday to disperse stone-throwing protesters demanding members of the nation's Electoral Commission resign. The demonstrators gathered near the headquarters of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, accusing it of having a bias in favor of the government, demanding it be disbanded. Elections are still a year away in Kenya, but the country has a history of bitterly fought campaigns. In 2007, post-election violence left some 1,200 dead. The UN Refugee Agency has called on Kenya to reconsider plans to close the country's two main refugee camps, warning it would have a devastating consequence for hundreds of thousands. Kenya announced it would close the Dadaab and Kakuma refugee camps within the shortest time possible, citing security concerns, especially from Somali-based al-Shabaab militants. North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un has presided over a mass rally and parade in Pyongyang Tuesday, a day after a rare Workers' Party Congress concluded by elevating him to party chairman. Russia Monday marked the 71st anniversary of its official end of the European part of World War II, known in Russia's Victory Day with a massive military parade in Red Square. President Vladimir Putin called for an international security system to fight global terrorism. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Ivory Coast First Lady Simone Babo will go on trial on May 31st for crimes against humanity.
While Laurent Gbagbo is on trial at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, Simone Gbagbo is being trialed in Ivory Coast because Ivorian authorities refuse to transfer her, claiming the country's justice system is capable of judging her.
That's VOA correspondent Emily Yalp in Abidjan. The United Nations appeals for funds to end Zimbabwe's food insecurity. Cameroon urges religious leaders to help fight Boko Haram. And Congolese opposition leader Moise Katumbi has met with prosecutors over allegations he recruited foreign mercenaries.
Mr. Katumbi said that he didn't know that one of the people the American company sent him for advising on the security matter was a soldier.
Gama Momba is one of the lawyers for Congolese opposition leader Moise Katumbi. A Back to Learning campaign has been relaunched in one of South Sudan's states, and the largest diamond ever discovered goes on public display in New York. Those stories plus Marco Oman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Ivory Coast First Lady Simone Babo will go on trial for crimes against humanity on May 31st in Ivory Coast in connection with the 2010 post-election violence. The announcement was made Monday in Abidjan by legal authorities after Mrs. Babo's appeal to drop the case was rejected. Her husband, former President Laurent Gbagbo, is being tried at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Emily Yop reports from Abidjan.
Supporters of Simone Gbagbo gave her a warm welcome as she entered a criminal court that will judge her in Abidjan. The former First Lady is being trialed for crimes against humanity allegedly committed during the post-electoral crisis in 2010 and 2011, triggered after her husband, then President Laurent Gbagbo, and contestant Alassane Ouattara both claimed victory in presidential elections. The subsequent 4 months of violence left at least 3,000 people dead. She and her husband were eventually arrested and Ouattara became president. While Laurent Gbagbo is on trial at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, Simone Gbagbo is being trialed in Ivory Coast because Ivorian authorities refused to transfer her, claiming the country's justice system is capable of judging her.
Elle souhaite être jugée par une cour ivoirienne. Pourquoi? Parce que elle est accusée.
Defense attorney Rodrigue Djadje says Mrs. Gbagbo prefers to be judged by an Ivorian court because she is accused of committing crimes toward her own citizens, so she must explain herself in front of them. But he adds that justice in Ivory Coast is not independent, is under the influence of the government, and that there are strong chances she will be condemned even if there is no evidence. The defense argued in court Monday the composition of the jury is not fair and is biased against her. Simone Gbagbo, 66 years old, was sentenced to 20 years in prison last year by a different court for undermining state security and organizing armed gangs. She has maintained her innocence. Representing the state, prosecutor Sungalo Koulibaly says he's hoping justice will be served for the victims who have suffered a lot. Justice must be served in order to reconcile the population. Arguments are due to start later this month. Simone Gbagbo could face life in prison if she's found guilty. Emily Yob for VOA News in Abidjan.
Democratic Republic of Congo opposition leader Moise Katumbi has told Congolese prosecutors he has no plans to overthrow the government of President Joseph Kabila by use of force. Mr. Katumbi, the former governor of the mineral-rich Katanga province, appeared before prosecutors on Monday to answer government allegations he recruited foreign mercenaries. Gama Molba, one of the lawyers for Mr. Katumbi, says Mr. Katumbi told the prosecutors he had asked a U.S.-based security company to send him someone who would advise him on his security details since the government have withdrawn the Congolese security that had been assigned to him after he joined the opposition. But Momba says Katumbi told prosecutors he did not know that the individual sent by the U.S. security company had been a member of the U.S. military.
Mr. Katumbi arrived to the office of the prosecutor at 10 o'clock, and the population was informed that he's coming to the prosecutor office. All the town were mobilized and come with Katumbi to the court.
When we spoke with you on Sunday, you said that the prosecutors, in their letter to Mr. Katumbi, they did not tell him what they were inviting him for. Now, during the meeting, what did they say to Mr. Katumbi?
The subject was about the recruitment of old soldiers of American army. The prosecutor asked to Mr. Katumbi if he was some old soldiers of American army to protect him. And Mr. Katumbi said that he didn't know that one of the people the American company sent him for advising on the security matter was a soldier, because he asked to the company to send him one person to advise him on security matter when the government take out all the policemen who was keeping on security. He said that he asked for one person to advise him on the security matter.
Why does he need a foreign person to advise him on security matters? Why can't he get a Congolese person?
In the first time, he talked to the security Congolese company. But you know, all the companies are fearing to have problem with the government because Mr. Katumbi go in the opposition. So during this time, the government is fighting against the guys who are working with people who are in the opposition. So when he asked to the Congolese companies to help him on the security matters, all the companies was fearing, so they refused to cooperate with him.
Did the prosecutor ask him to get rid of the foreign security advisor, or is the government going to give him Congolese security advisor?
No, for the government, the information they received it was that Mr. Katumbi is making a recruitment of foreign soldiers to organize some things against the government. That was the information they put in the file of Katumbi. But when they asked him, he said no.
Do you expect that the government will come after Mr. Katumbi again on this matter?
Well, I think the prosecutor understand that it was just a matter of personal security, not security against the government. I think they understand it.
Will Mr. Katumbi focus now on running for president?
Yeah, I think the problem was about his intention to become a candidate for the presidential elections. I think now things are clear that he never think about organize something against the government.
Apart from the advisor, does Mr. Katumbi have some Congolese security people?
We can have private security. The private security, we have two ways to have private security. You can appoint your security, so you select some person to keep on your security, or you can talk with the security company. But the problem Mr. Katumbi is facing now is that when he asked to a private company, a local company, to give him some advising on the security matters, those companies are fearing to have problems with the government, so they refuse.
Now, talk to me about the population that came to see Mr. Katumbi. Why do you think they show up to see Mr. Katumbi with the prosecutor?
The population came with Katumbi because the news they received, the population received, was that they need to put Mr. Katumbi in the prison or send him to Kinshasa. So the population come to say we are not agree to see Katumbi in the prison or to see Mr. Katumbi be transferred in Kinshasa. That was the reason the population come and surrounding the office of the prosecutor.
Gama Momba is one of the lawyers for Congolese opposition leader Moise Katumbi. He was speaking with me from Lubumbashi in eastern Congo. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 10th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's send a shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Radio Life in Lofa County, Liberia, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, and Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Cameroon says Boko Haram is trying to enlist traditional and religious leaders in the north to help them recruit new members amid continued military pressure on both sides of the border. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Abdurrahman Usman says Boko Haram kidnapped him from his home in Kerawa on the border with Nigeria last year. The local Muslim religious leader says militants told him he could go home if he would recruit for them. He refused and was freed in February during a raid by soldiers.
C'est les leaders de Boko Haram, les gens qui s'infiltrent là.
He says imams and traditional rulers are being manipulated by Boko Haram fighters to convince naive young people to join the terrorist group. He says Boko Haram now targets traditional rulers not only for ransoms, but also to get them to help recruit more members. He says some imams return to Cameroon and lie to young people, telling them they will earn $500 per month if they join Boko Haram, or trying to trick them into thinking they are joining the military. The Islamic Council of Traditional Rulers and Muslim Dignitaries invited Usman, about 200 other community leaders from the north, to Yaoundé this week to talk about how they can counter Boko Haram's influence. Inusa Asabe of the Islamic Council says the government needs their help.
They have to go towards the traditional rulers. Government has to come in. That is, send security people who are not in uniform just to get the investigation so that they will know exactly what is going on.
At the meeting Monday, the council said several religious and traditional leaders in the north have been arrested recently, accused of working for Boko Haram. The government said the suspects are cooperating with authorities and will face charges in court, but would not say how many have been detained. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The United Nations says Zimbabwe's food insecurity situation is dire and desperate and set to increase unless international help arrives. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare.
The UN World Food Programme says it has received about 20% of its financial requirements to mediate the effects of El Nino-induced drought in Zimbabwe. It says it needs to feed 2.8 million people immediately due to failed crops. WFP director in Zimbabwe, Eddie Rowe, sums up the situation in the Southern African nation.
May, June, you assume that some of the households would have some crops at home that would take them for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. But once it's depleted, there's nothing. Then you see the numbers spiking up to about 4.4 in January. So that's the situation. It is desperate. It's a dire situation.
The United Nations estimates 28 million people in Africa have been affected by El Nino-induced drought that has slashed the output of the region's staple crop, corn. In February, Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe's government launched an appeal for funding to feed more than a quarter of the country's 13 million people. On Monday, UN Zimbabwe Country Director Bishop Parajuli said the response is mainly from the United States Agency for International Development, but is needed.
I would say still we have a gap of about 290 million in overall needs. We still have a huge gap. So I want to really appeal to the development partners, both from the east and the west and everywhere, to join in and set the example of USAID to support and help Zimbabwean population in this time of crisis.
Since Zimbabwe appealed for assistance to ease hunger, besides the USAID, other Western institutions, such as the European Union, chipped in, as well as China, which donated $24.6 million worth of rice in March. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Education officials in South Sudan's Bodo State have launched what they are calling a Back to Learning campaign to ensure that many children who dropped out of school due to insecurity in the former Western Equatorial State will return to school. Officials say up to 30% of school children in the area dropped out of school during the conflict. Gift Friday reports from Juba.
UNICEF and President Salva Kiir first launched the Back to Learning campaign in 2015 to get more than 400,000 children who dropped out of school across the country during the fighting back into school. Budwe State Education Minister Pierre Philip Michael says education officials are now relaunching the campaign due to the conflict that erupted in the former Western Equatoria State in July 2015.
Before the problems of insecurity befell the Greater Western Equatoria, we had over 132,000 children in our schools. But from the time the problem started in Mundri to Maridi, Yambio, Ezo, and so on, the number drastically reduced to about 79,000. Now that peace has come, let children get back to school.
Michael says the state government will work with parents, education agencies, and local community leaders to ensure that children return to school. But he admits that insecurity in some villages and inadequate teacher salaries remain big obstacles in the drive to improve education.
One big challenge was the issue of insecurity that is now being minimized. The other challenge is the high cost of living that has put the teacher at a very disadvantaged position. Some of our teachers still are receiving £250, and they are unable to earn a living with this money. That is discouraging the teachers. We learned that from grade 17 to grade 10, there would be a basic salary increase by 3.
Isaac Therese, the headmaster of Masia Nazarene Primary School in Yambio, says this campaign will help more children to return to classrooms. Samuel Bukenya, director of Young Angels Nazarene Primary School, says he is grateful for the government initiative. Michael says, following the signing of the peace agreement between the government and SSNLM and the recent formation of Transitional Government of National Unity, thousands of children have returned to their villages, but says some of the children need counseling so they can be reintegrated back into the community. Thousands of people were forced out of the state and hundreds were killed when conflict broke out between government forces and local armed vigilantes in several parts of the former Western Equatoria State. For VOA News, I'm Gifted Friday in Juba.
The largest gem-quality diamond discovered in more than a century was on public display in New York last Saturday. The 3-billion-year-old crystal mined in Africa last year is about the size of a tennis ball. The diamond will be auctioned in London the end of June and is expected to sell for at least $70 million. VOA's Deborah Block has more.
To many of us, this may look like a lovely crystal, but for diamond experts, it's the find of a century. Last week, the huge diamond was unveiled at Sotheby's New York headquarters. Unearthed at a mine in Botswana, the diamond is named Our Light in Botswana's national language.
And it's a simply dramatically beautiful stone. I mean, it's unbelievable.
The 1,109-carat diamond measures 65 millimeters by 56 millimeters by 40 millimeters.
Just look at it. It's an extraordinary thing. The sheer size is difficult to comprehend.
The diamond has exceptional quality and transparency and could become the largest top quality diamond ever to be cut and polished.
This stone is just amazing. You can imagine the extraordinary stones that can be cut out of it.
Despite its size, this is not the largest gem quality diamond ever found. The Cullinan diamond, discovered in South Africa in 1905, was almost three times larger than Our Light. It was cut into several pieces, the largest of which are part of Britain's crown jewels, including the first Star of Africa, which adorns the royal scepter. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. The Court of Arbitration for Sports Cars has upheld sanctions preferred against former FIFA Vice President Michel Platini, Cars disclosed in Lausanne, Switzerland. FIFA found Platini and former FIFA President Sepp Blatter guilty of violating the FIFA Code of Ethics. However, Cars has reduced FIFA's ban on Platini from all football activities from 6 years to 4 years. Similarly, Cars reduces the fine imposed on Platini from over $80,000 to over $60,000. The Court of Arbitration for Sports is the world's highest authority in handling sports disputes, and its ruling is binding on all parties. Turning to athletics, Kenyan Dickson Kipsang-Tuwei clocked 2 hours 9 minutes and 27 seconds to set a personal best and course record at the Yellow River Estuary International Marathon in China on Sunday. His previous best was 2 hours 12 minutes and 29 seconds, and the previous course record was 2 hours 11 minutes and 44 seconds. In the women's race on Sunday, Kenyan Miriam Wangari was second ahead of Ethiopian Bizuayehu Ehite. In Nigeria, Kenyans Simon Cheprot and Pauline Wanjiru carried the day at the Okpepe 10 kilometers road race in Edo State, South Nigeria on Saturday. Cheprot covered the distance in 29 minutes and 48 seconds. Tanzanian Ishmael Jumagali was runner-up ahead of Ugandan Timothy Toroitich. Njeru clocked 33 minutes and 26 seconds to win the women's race, with fellow Kenyan Esther Ndiama second ahead of Ethiopian Bezuanesh Gudeta. Okpepe is Africa's only event that enjoys IAAF bronze label road race status. In the Czech Republic, Kenyans Lawrence Cherono and Lucy Karimi triumphed at the Prague Marathon in the Czech Republic capital on Sunday. Cherono clocked 2 hours 7 minutes and 24 seconds to improve his lifetime best by over 2 minutes. In a similar fashion, Karimi carried the day in the women's race in 2 hours 24 minutes and 46 seconds, shaving off more than 2 minutes of her previous personal best. And that's it for Daybreak African Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, May 10th.
I wish to call on the Nigeria Senate to urgently enact a law against a continual barbaric destruction of innocent life and property by the Fulani herdsmen. Otherwise, the situation shall soon be out of control. I am Prince John Ishio from Obanuku in Ogudu Catalanche, Cross Versus, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Former Ivory Coast First Lady Simone Gbagbo will go on trial for crimes against humanity on May 31st in Ivory Coast in connection with the 2010 post-election violence. The announcement was made Monday in Abidjan by legal authorities after Mrs. Gbagbo's appeal to drop the case was rejected. And Democratic Republic of Congo opposition leader Moise Katumbi has told Congolese prosecutors he has no plans to overthrow the government of President Joseph Kabila by use of force. That is it for this Tuesday, May 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in Feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.
UTC.